Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
It's a very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
98FM. Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Hello there. Good morning. And you're very welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport here on 98FM on a beautiful, sunny, cold Sunday morning in Dublin. Coming up on a packed show between now and 10am, we'll be talking to a man who is currently running his second marathon in 2 days for a charity, as you've been hearing on the news.
I done my first marathon. I ran through the night. During the night last night, it was extremely cold, extremely tough marathon as well. It took me 5.5 hours. And just feels shattered at the moment now.
Yeah, Mark Conlon will be here in just a second. We'll be asking outgoing Arden coach Joe Schmidt what he'll be doing next.
Yeah, I'm sure my wife is thinking what else is he going to do as well.
Peter O'Mahony and Shane Byrne will be here too on Rugby World Cup semi-final weekend. We'll have 98FM's League of Ireland Sunday, including your chance to win tickets to next weekend's FAI Cup finals at the Aviva Stadium. And we'll hear from Bernard Brogan on his retirement from Dublin. Ex-dub Charlie Redmond will also pay tribute to one of our best ever players.
I kind of knew throughout the year, this is kind of a bit of a bonus year for me.
And if you're a Liverpool fan, keep listening because there's some new pop-up stores and we have some vouchers for you to win coming up. So let's get the show on the road.
98FM. Now That's What I Call Sport.
Now, only one place to start this Sunday morning. It's with the Dublin Marathon. Over 20,000 people just beginning around now. And I'm going to tell Nathan my story in a moment about my voyage to work, because I had to abandon my car, jump on a Dublin bike and try and get to work because lots of the roads are closed. And one of those doing the marathon is Mark Conlon, and he joins me on the line now. Mark, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Thanks for having me on.
Mark, you might just explain to myself and the listeners what you did last night, what you're doing today and why.
Yeah, so I started last night at 12:30 in Clontarf for the Wynn Monument there. I done my first marathon. I ran through the night and absolutely shattered at the moment. And the reason, the mission why I'm doing it is to raise funds for St. Vincent de Paul and obviously to raise money for individuals and for families coming up to Christmas. You know, it's a time when families are struggling. So that was the drive behind it, why I did it. So during the night last night, it was extremely cold, extremely tough marathon as well. It took me 5.5 hours and just feels shattered at the moment now.
Mark is actually getting ready to run his second marathon, and we're speaking at 8:15 because when this is going out at 9:05, the marathon will have begun. So explain to us about last night, running through Dublin at night time in the cold. Were you on your own, and what was the experience actually like? I'm sure it's actually very difficult, but also a nice experience to go running through the capital city in the middle of the night.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you where I was. I actually, for safety reasons, I done out at Clontarf at the seafront there. So I started at the Wynn Monument there and I went down as far as the bridge there at Bull Island. And I came back up to the Wynn Monument and that was 8 loops of that touching the bridge. And that was a full marathon. I done that for safety reasons during the night. The only problem, it was well lit up as well, and I have to say it was really nice. The lights of Dublin look great at night, but the only problem was the sea breeze at night. So probably 4 hours into it, I felt like I was getting hypothermia, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
Shaking. That was the only downside to it, though, you know. I couldn't have no complaints, no rain or anything like that, so everything went well. At the moment now, I just feel drained.
And what are you expecting, Mark, from the second marathon?
I'm just hoping to tip around. I'd be happy if I finish it, you know, anything from 5.5 hours. I'd be delighted to finish it because at the moment I don't feel like I'd run 100 metres, you know. But I'm sure once I get going and the crowd and everything else give you a lift, and I'm sure I'll run into some running buddies, DBRC are going to be at it. So looking forward to running into a few friends.
Now, Mark, this isn't the first time that you've done something like this. You did 10 marathons in 10 days. You've done 33 marathons in 33 days as well for various charities. You might just explain to myself and the listeners the background to those and the challenges that you've done before.
In April there, I done 10 marathons in 10 days. That was for Inner City Help and Homeless. I'm very passionate about that, being a next soldier. What I see in over in Chad, I never thought I'd see here in Dublin. You know, there's campsites set up all over the country. There's kids going to, in their uniforms, being fed at food tables at night. They're walking the streets all day. Your family's living in one bedroom accommodation, hotel rooms. So I was very passionate about that there in April. I raised €8,220 for Inner City Help and Homeless, and it was a pleasure to do that for them. And the year before that, I ran 33 marathons in 33 days. That was for Peter McCrae Trust, and it's the same thing. Over the last 5 years, it's been focused on the homeless crisis that we have in the country. It's becoming more like an emergency now, and the government are going to have to act on it. But for me, it was just a pleasure to raise a small amount of funds for charities like that.
Yeah, and at the moment, you're running these two marathons for St Vincent de Paul as well, Mark. Why did you choose that charity this time?
Well, to be honest with you, when I was younger, I had a bit of assistance as well over coming up to Christmas especially. They're great when you're struggling like that, you know, from food vouchers to coming out to assist you like that. So that was a big part of the reason. I know when we were kids, we did get assisted. I remember we got hampers around Christmas and things like that. So it's very close to the heart in that way. I just see the great work that you do as well, you know, so that was the drive behind it. And obviously there's a lot of pressure on families and individuals coming up to Christmas to try and get presents for their loved ones and stuff like that. So if I can help out in any way at all, it's job done for me.
Yeah, and it's something that's, you know, in the news almost every day at this stage, and, you know, especially up to Christmas, and even this morning, you mentioned your run last night and just how cold it is in Dublin and in Ireland today as well. And, you know, if someone is listening who's in government or, you know, I suppose able to help these people and the people who are on the streets last night, they'll be on the streets again, you know, the next night and the next night and the next night, and there is a feeling that nobody is there to help them, bar people like yourself and like the charities. I'm talking about the government. What would you say to them?
Well, they need to act, because it is people like, you know, a lending hand, Bridges of Hope, that are out there feeding the homeless every night. It shouldn't have to be us that are doing extreme things like this. The government need to get out there and have a proper look at what's going on, or there's going to be more deaths on the street. You can see how bad it's getting, and every winter it's the same. It seems to get the spotlight put on it, but it needs to be all year round. You know, like I said, even last night, I've seen lads sleeping in ditches, you know, and for me, to struggle through that was actually nothing, because all night it was just thinking, people have to do that every single night of the week. So for me, it was like, you know, I'm kind of feeling a bit sorry for myself now, but there's people walking them streets every single night. And I've seen it before firsthand, being in the army, you know. So I just think they need to act. And if they don't act, and if they can't deal with the situation, they're going to have to go to the UN and call it an emergency and let the UN come in and sort it out. Because if this isn't sorted out quick, we're just going to lose more lives. It's very sad. There is great people out there, like Inner City Help and Homeless, like, as I said, Bridges of Hope, Freebies for Families. There's hundreds of groups out there, great groups, and they're feeding, as I said, young kids, and that's the big one for me. Kids going in their school uniform to get fed. If that doesn't, and campsites as well. If you look at the Red Cow roundabout, there's a campsite there now, probably a year. All along the canal there in the summer, there was campsites. So if it's getting that bad now, you know, they're going to have to act. It can't be left down to people like us.
Yeah, Mark, very well said. If people want to finally follow your story and maybe lend a few quid to your cause, which will help the SVP, where can they find you on social media and stuff like that?
Yeah, well, it's Mark Conlon on Facebook, and you'll see me, sponsored by ASIC, so you'll see me pointed to the ASIC sign, or it's two full marathons in one day for SVP if they wanted to sponsor any small amount. And even if there's companies listening and it's a field donation, that would be great as well.
Fantastic.
Any help at all would be great.
Great, so fantastic. So, Mark Conlon, the best of luck with Marathon 2. Congratulations on last night, and we'll speak to you again. Cheers.
Thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, amazing stuff, and the best of luck to everybody running the Dublin Marathon today. Over 22,000 participants, and Nathan, they have begun. I was coming in this morning, and literally, people in running gear coming from every corner, every street, every building. There was people about to start the marathon.
Yeah, 22,500, so to speak. But yeah, there was a huge amount of money raised so far. By 8:30 this morning, there was over €406,000 raised so far. As you mentioned, this marathon is a single lap. It starts and finishes in the city centre. It starts on Fitzwilliam Street Upper and finishes at Merrion Square, to be exact. However, it's a bit of a longer lap than just that, as it finds its way through the Phoenix Park, back down through Dolphins Barn, Bushy Park, UCD, and then finally back into the city centre. So best of luck to everyone taking part.
Yeah, 26.2 miles as well, and I had a bit of a journey coming into work, Nathan, because normally I drive in on a Sunday morning and there's no traffic and no people and nothing, And this morning, and I was warned last night that, you know, there would be roads closed. I thought I'd be grand. So I came in and just traffic chaos from like Connolly Station, Amien Street onwards, and ended up having to abandon the car near our old office, which is over on Grand Canal Quay. And I have a Dublin Bikes card, so I got on the Dublin bike, like 3 degrees, quite chilly. And the guards allowed me to cycle the wrong way up a one-way street that was closed, because I asked nicely, because I had to get to work. And then I got to 98FM Towers here, and the Dublin bike stand around the corner is gone. The other one around the corner was full, so I had to cycle back to Stephen's Green to find the third Dublin bike stand to put the bike back and run to work.
So basically what you're telling me is you cycled slash ran 26 miles before you got here this
morning. Effectively did the Tour de Dublin bike style on a Dublin bike. And yeah, it was great, but it's so great to see all the people and different kind of people coming from all sides of the country, from different counties to do the marathon, and different countries, of course, as well. And yeah, it's a chilly one this morning, but I'm sure they'll be warmed up nice and shortly.
I have so much respect for people taking part in marathons, because it's such a tough thing, grueling thing on your body and mentally as well. So, like, you know, fair play to them, especially in that weather this morning.
It was still to come on 98FM, so That's What I Call Sport. We are going to have League of Ireland Sunday. We'll hear from Joe Schmidt, Peter O'Mahony and Shane Byrne, plus Bernard Brogan and Charlie Redmond too. We're back in a second.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
You're very welcome back. 20 past nine on a lovely, cold, sunny Sunday in Dublin. It's nice and fresh out there, and everybody on the Dublin Marathon course at the moment. So best of luck to all of those. And Nathan, we have some League of Ireland news. Let me press this button first, though, please.
League of Ireland on 98FM. The best place on the radio for the SSE Airtricity League.
Solid communication out of you there, Jay. Yes, congratulations to Piemont, who won the Soho Hotels Women's National League Championship. They picked up 56 points after 21 games. This is their second title since their 2011-2012 season win, and they will now represent the league in the UEFA Women's Champions League next season. Congratulations to all involved.
Yes, well done to Piemont, and we'll of course be previewing. But is that probably a good time to do the competition for the FAI Cup final, Nathan? Would it be given the fact that Piemont are actually in us against Wexford next weekend?
Seamless segue there, Jay.
Yes, a festival of football takes place at the Aviva Stadium next Sunday, November 3rd. The Soho Hotels ladies final kicks off at midday. That's between Wexford and Piemont. And the Extra.ie men's cup finals at 3:30, featuring Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers. And thanks to our friends at Extra.ie, we've got 5 pairs of West Stand tickets to give away today. You can find out more on extra.ie/sport. If you'd like to be there, it's nice and simple. Text or WhatsApp cup final plus your name and where you are, and the number you need is 0877 98 98 98. That's cup final plus your name and where you are, and text or WhatsApp to 0877 98 98 98, and we will be in touch with those 5 winners directly after the show. Now, Dundalk, the League of Ireland champions, lifted the trophy after beating St Pat's 4-0 at Oriel Park on Friday night, and the captain Brian Gartland caught up with Dundalk TV.
Brilliant win. What a bit of a downer if we hadn't won. Hadn't a good performance. Thought we had a great performance. Football was good. Good patience. Great tempo to us at times. Created lots of chances. Scored 4 great goals. And yeah, it's really positive night going into the cup final next week. And also, you're lifting the trophy tonight in front of your home crowd. I think 2 games we drew at home all year. We wanted to keep that record going. We want to keep momentum going. And, you know, it gives you confidence.
Yeah, it's an incredible record. Only 4 points dropped over the course of a 18 game home league season. Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, brilliant. And I think we lost one last year. So, We always say this place has to be a fortress if you're going to win the league, and it has been like that for us. It's been brilliant, you know, teams fair coming here. We've come up against every different opposition, different shapes, different tactics, sitting in, pressing the lot, sort of thing. So it's never easy, and especially sometimes you can find it a bit harder at home than on the road. But we showed we've been brilliant here all year.
That's the Dundalk captain Brian Gartland. Now, speaking of captains, Derek Pender of Bohemians retired from professional football on Friday night, and he scored the winner against Sligo Rovers from the penalty spot, a 2-1 victory. Now, we're going to speak to Derek in more detail on our League of Ireland podcast in a couple of weeks. He's going to come in and join us in studio for a full look back at his career in the league. But before that game on Friday, on Thursday actually, he caught up with our Stephen Doyle to talk about that retirement.
Derek Pender, Bohemians captain, or maybe I should say now ex-captain, because you've made the decision to hang up the boots.
Yeah, I have. It wasn't obviously easy, you know. You don't think this time is ever going to come, but look, it's the time is right for me to pack it in.
What did you have to think about? What were the factors in the making of your decision?
Just everything, really. You know, it's like we've had an unbelievable season. The journey the club has been on since I've been here, it's been amazing, really, the turnaround and everything that the club has done and where we've come from back when I signed. I just thought, you know, great season, Europe. We got Europe and I'm getting on now, you know what I mean? I've found it tough in a couple of games this year and I thought maybe the time is right.
Why have you found it tough? Is that down to, you know, maybe the pace of players you're coming up against? Or?
Yeah, probably. They do seem to be getting younger and quicker and stronger now, but it's probably my age as well that's caught up on me. But I think it's I've enjoyed it. It's been an unbelievable experience playing here, and you know, being captain of this club has just been the proudest moments for me.
You still, I would imagine, have a lot to offer from a coaching perspective. I'm sure you've, well, from what I've heard anyway, you've been very good with the young players in the dressing room this season. So is that the next step now, is to move into coaching here with Keith and Trevor?
Yeah, hopefully. Look, we haven't really spoke about it or thought about it really. I've only ever thought about playing, and that's what I said to Keith last week and was telling him about it. Well, if he knows it a while now, but I've never thought about not playing, so I've obviously started thinking about coaching now, and I'll sit down with him next week and see what I can do, and hopefully I can do something that's relevant to us, you know.
When you see the likes of Stephen O'Donnell taking over St. Pat's, are you kind of maybe thinking, well, maybe a management job might be something I could step into in sometime in the future?
Oh, you never know. You know, I don't know, to be honest with you. I never thought about anything else but just playing football. So I'll sit down next week after this week and take everything in and see where we go.
You can watch that full chat with Stephen Doyle and Derek Pender on youtube.com/offtheball. That was Bowes 2, Sligo Rovers 1 on Friday, and Dundalk 4, St. Pat's 0. The other games, Derry City beat Finn Harps by 4-0. Junior got a hat-trick there, which means that he has the golden boot for the season. Grant Gillespie got the other goal there as well. That means Derry City joined Bohemians as the last two European teams. Shamrock Rovers before the cup final beat Cork City by 3-0. Another great goal by Jack Byrne in that game, and it finished Waterford 4 UCD 2. So that means that UCD, as we knew, were relegated, and Waterford finishing on a high. The First Division playoff finished Drogheda United 5 Cabinteely 1. Drogheda centre-back Luke McNally scored a hat-trick in that game. It means a 6-2 aggregate win, and it means that the Drogs will face Finn Harps tomorrow on Bank Holiday Monday and on Friday of next week in the playoff to decide who will be in the Premier Division next season. And here's the views of the Drogs gaffer, Tim Clancy.
Listen, they've been operating at a lot higher level than we have this season, and playing against better teams, and they've played against far better teams than us this season. And listen, that'll play into it. But then again, we've got the habit of winning, the habit of being competitive in games and attacking, and we're not going to change that come Monday. But it is what it is. We play. There's no point now getting this far, 31 games out into the season, starting to try to change things. What you're going to do, so it is what it is. We'll play the way we play, and hopefully that's enough to get us over the line.
And lastly, I know you're already planning for next season, no matter what league you're in. You've made some re-signings already. You've signed the new 2-year deal, as has your assistant Kev Doherty. What would it mean to the club and to you if you could get through these two games and be in the Premier Division next season?
That's where everybody at the club wants to be. It's every player here wants to be in the Premier Division. I have aspirations to manage at the highest level I can, and this would be the next step for me, is trying to get a team promoted. And but if we're not, it's still a great club to be at. You've seen the support here tonight. We had a big crowd against Shell. We're just hoping that we can keep them coming. We're scoring plenty of goals, and the more bums we can get in seats, the better atmosphere and environment it is for the players to play in. And listen, if we get up, we'll be over the moon.
The Drogheda manager Tim Clancy. The views now of Finn Harps defender Daniel O'Reilly.
Yeah, it's a massive game for us. It's something we've been prepping for the last few weeks, trying different things in training and stuff, so we can't shy away from that. And we know Drogheda will be a very good side. They've got very good attacking players, so we've got to be switched on both mentally and physically. It's a two-legged affair, so anything can happen really, but I think we're well prepped in advance, so looking forward to it now.
Yeah, we'll have full chats with Daniel O'Reilly plus Tim Clancy and Drogheda striker Chris Lyons on a special preview podcast from our League of Ireland podcast, which will be available in the next hour or so. And best luck to those teams. The first leg taking place at United Park tomorrow.
It's the greatest league in the world. League of Ireland on 98 FM.
Now we're going to turn our attention from the football to the rugby, and Nathan, Pro 14 action and a low scoring match.
Yeah, but a low scoring match, as you say, there, all four provinces getting the win though. That match you mentioned, Leinster, of course, with that massive 3-0 away victory to Zebre. Elsewhere, Connacht had an impressive 24-22 win over the Toyota Cheetahs, who have been in great form so far this year. Munster recorded a 28-12 win over the Ospreys, while Ulster beat Cardiff Blues 23 points to 14.
Now, the Ireland team arrived back in Dublin Airport during the week, and we were there to meet them. The views of the Ireland coach Joe Schmidt, the outgoing Ireland coach Joe Schmidt, who began by speaking to journalists about his Ireland memories over the time he's been in charge, 6.5 years, of course, as well. And of course, that defeat to the All Blacks.
I mean, even the disappointment that I've had, some of the high points are just probably some of the messages I've received in the last 48 hours, just from ex-players or people who've said that, you know, that there was a real impact during that 6.5 years. Some of them who went through that, because I know that the trophies are the visible things, the wins are the visible things, but you wanna try to. Help people get better, not just players improve. And you know, I think that I worked as hard as I could to do that. So it doesn't always work out in the 2 40-minute periods. Those two incredibly brutal, but incredibly enjoyable 40-minute periods where we've had those trophies fall our way, and the end as we did is really disappointing. Obviously, Twickenham in the Grand Slam is special. Just that first half in Twickenham, that was as good as we got, probably, along with Chicago in 2016. We played a team that had won 6 out of 6 in the Rugby Championship, amassed 35 tries, conceded 5 across those 6 games against the best the Southern Hemisphere had, and we got 5 all by our lonesome in a super game, which was an expression of what we were capable of doing. And you know, there's been some special days with the crowd. I would say one of my best memories is you know, France at the last World Cup, the Irish crowd that were in the Millennium Stadium that day were absolutely phenomenal. And I know the next week didn't go well for us with the carnage that happened in that game, but it was an incredibly proud moment to watch the players acknowledge the crowd and the support that we had. You know, it's only just last November, not even a year ago, that we had the reverse result against New Zealand, not with the same margin, but I felt we really deserved to win that day, and the crowd was phenomenal. So, you know, I'll take away some really special memories, but they're a little bit hard to dig out at the moment because they're clouded by the disappointment of, you know, Saturday evening.
Now, the last time Ireland exited the World Cup in 2015, of course, Joe Schmidt was staying in charge and he had a Six Nations to prepare for and, you know, something to focus his mind to take it away from the disappointment of the World Cup. And now he doesn't have that.
Yeah, because it's what you finished on. And so it is more difficult, and because that's, you know, I've finished as a rugby coach, and it's hard to step away with that as your last involvement. But at the same time, I can only work as hard as I can work, and I've worked with incredibly good people, the staff and the playing staff. So I do think, as well as that, I know these players, and I'm going to really enjoy watching them continue to progress. And I think Andy and the team, that's still going to be doing a super job. So I'm really looking forward to the Six Nations. I might, instead of looking through the glass, I might just have one in my hand, and I'm looking forward to that.
So what's next for Joe?
Yeah, I'm sure my wife is thinking, what else is he going to do as well? I know that I'm not going to do it in the near future, and I've been blown away by some of the approaches and incredibly humbled by them. But I made a commitment that I'm going to absolutely stick to through to at least June, July of next year, and then as a, you know, as a family, we'll sort of step back and decide what people want to do and how we'll go about things, because it hasn't been a job. It's been a way of life. It's been 7 days a week, and
I think I can honestly say in 6.5 years I've not taken one full day off. There's not one day where I don't think I've either been scribbling notes or watching footage or getting to a game or doing some coaching or going into a club and doing something, and I've loved it.
It's always nice to hear from the players, and we just have a short clip of Peter O'Mahony speaking to Shane Hannan at the airport during the week.
You know, we could be here for a while with this answer. Look, I think for me he's changed the prospect and the outlook on rugby for young generations, which is probably the biggest thing you could say about any person's career. You know, there's kids in Ireland now who will be expecting to be successful, expecting to win trophies regularly, and there'll be a big huge portion of that will be down to Joe's work and his contribution there should be. So you know, not only has he changed, you know, the direction of my career and this team's career, but he's changed probably the careers of the guys who are in primary school and secondary school at the moment. So he's done incredible work.
Now former Lions, Leinster and Ireland man Shane Byrne is on the line. Shane, good morning, how are you?
How are we doing?
Good, thanks, yourself?
Yeah, not too bad now.
So Shane, you're watching the second semi-final at the moment, Wales against South Africa, coming up to half-time. How's it going? What's the score?
Yeah, it's 6-3 to South Africa. It's just a kicking fest. That's it, basically. Nobody seems to want possession. Everyone's just kicking the ball back to the other guy. So, yeah, nothing too exciting at the moment. Definitely not like the semi-final yesterday, which was an absolute cracker from the start.
Yeah, England 19, All Blacks 7. And Shane, before we talk about the match, the England V to match the Haka was, like, amazing. And we spoke last week about Ireland facing the Haka and what different teams have done. And at times over the years, some teams have actually stepped forward and walked towards the All Blacks. But I noticed, like, the referees seemed to be telling England to line up straight and they were like, absolutely not, we're going to call these out. And some amazing scenes, really.
Yeah, the supposed etiquette about it is that you don't cross into their half. I think that's what the refs are trying to do. There's a couple of players into the half at the end of the V. But listen, any true New Zealander or Maori or anything like that, it's a challenge. And you can react to whatever way you want. Like, you know, you hear silly people going, oh, isn't it terrible, you should respect. That's absolute bull. Like, particularly with Ireland and singing the Fields of Athenry, that's fantastic. Like, they love that because it's a challenge for, you know, we all know it's their war cry, they're what they go into battle doing. And if you accept the challenge, you know, rather than just standing there, they like you to react to it, to do something to it. And it's just the powers that be, the guys sitting up at their desks think, oh, isn't it terrible? That's not terrible. It was fantastic what England did. Absolutely brilliant, accepting the challenge in the way that they wanted and reacting to it the way that they wanted. It was great to see.
And Shane, the match itself, England winners into the final, of course, as well. And, you know, we saw how good New Zealand were against Ireland the previous week, even though Ireland were quite poor. But for England, like, just a brilliant, brilliant performance on a massive stage for them.
It is absolutely fantastic. And you know what? The scoreline flatters New Zealand. England had another few. We know there are 2 tries disallowed, but there are other opportunities that they had as well. They were absolutely fantastic. It's amazing to think, I've said it before, that New Zealand, been such a fantastic side as they haven't, they don't really have a plan B. If plan A doesn't work, they don't have really anything else to go to, because their plan A is usually so fantastic. But if you stop them on the line, if you stop those offloads, and if you make very, very few mistakes, which are the things that they rely on, they don't really have something else to go to. They really do get stuck. And that's what happens. England just came out. They started fantastically, and they just kept the pressure on them, and they didn't know what to do. And they did look hesitant in patches in that game, and you've got to hand it to England. It was an absolute masterclass in how to play against New Zealand.
Yeah, and they'll play against either Wales or South Africa in the final next weekend, Shane, and we don't know who's going to win that just yet because it's still ongoing at the moment. But given what England did yesterday, would you make them favourites heading into the final no matter who they face now?
Yeah, I would. I think that was fantastic. Now, the biggest issue and the biggest question left to answer was that psychologically England's final? That's going to be the big task for Eddie Jones now, is to see, can he get them to the heights that he did? To play like that was absolutely superb, but it takes its toll mentally and physically. And to see, can he raise it again for the next game? You'd like to think that they could, that they definitely, you know, have enough of the tanks because they were in such control. But that's going to be the only question left to ask from an England point of view. If they come out and they play like that against England or South Africa, I genuinely think they would win.
And Shane, we heard from Joe Schmidt there earlier on in the show, and, you know, speaking at Dublin Airport and speaking for the last time really as the Ireland coach, and we're a week on from what happened against the All Blacks. We're also looking back on, you know, his 6.5 years and all that. I know we spoke briefly about it last week, but haven't had time to reflect, and he's had time to reflect there as well. He'll be very, very proud of the job he did overall, despite it ending quite badly last weekend.
Yeah, look, I suppose it's good that we're kind of looking back at that already, because it would be an awful shame if 2019 was what we really tainted his era with us. You know, because he offered so much more. Irish rugby is in such a better place because he came here and he coached for the 6 years, I think it was. And, you know, that is a fact. And no matter what happened in 2019, no matter what the reasonings for us, and whether it was part of it that he just got it wrong in that time, you know, just for that year, it still doesn't change the fact that, you know, we are one of the world challengers in international rugby now. His time through Leinster brought them up, got them silverware, and then up to Ireland and championship wins, you know, series wins away from home, you know, winning on foreign soil, beating New Zealand twice, Grand Slams. You know, these are all things that were achieved in the Joe Schmidt era and need to be remembered and celebrated.
Shane, lastly, Neil Francis had a very good piece in The Independent, and the headline is Andy Farrell now facing the most difficult mission he has ever taken on, and he is now the Ireland head coach and has to get the team ready for the opening Six Nations game, which is against Scotland at the Aviva on the 1st of February. That'll come along quicker than we think, and of course the players back to their provinces and clubs now for Pro 14 and so on. But Andy Farrell, I'm sure, is now very, very quickly planning his tenure as the boss.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. See, he's a thorough professional. Rugby league backgrounds, defensively as assistant coaches, rugby league guys have been absolutely superb. They've made a huge mark all the way around the world, as has Andy himself. You know, but as head coaches, they do get challenges. There's no doubt about that. He's bringing a good team in around him, and I think, you know, there's a heavy task ahead of him, but he'll be up for the job. But I expect to see changes. I don't think the side that started against New Zealand will be anything like the side that will start against Scotland come the roll around of the Six Nations.
Yeah, because he has to pick a new captain, and of course at the end of these competitions, and there are some older players who maybe stayed for the last couple of Six Nations because the World Cup was coming, and they won't be around for the next World Cup, of course, in terms of being available to play for Ireland. So he will have to probably make some tough decisions on maybe who'll be the captain, and maybe also what players he feels can't add value to what he wants to do moving forward.
But that's the whole thing, isn't it? Is that, look, Ireland do take a bit of criticism for the fact that we're still a Six Nations oriented. We're a small rugby union. We need the money for the Six Nations to do well. And that's a concentration that the coaches are given, that they have to do well in the Six Nations. And I think we've got to get a longer term thinking in it. So come around the next World Cup in 2023, we have a squad that are ready to play for that World Cup. So if there are 50-50 choices, he should definitely pick the player who's going to be there in 2023 and state that and say that is what he has his eye on towards.
Shane, thanks, Emil. A quick update on Wales, South Africa first before half time, please, since you have a TV in front of you and I don't.
Yeah, hang on. I just walking around there.
No problem.
It's still a kicking fest, and it's still 9-3. Oh, no, it's 9-3 to South Africa now. Just a penalty, and there we go. There's another kick.
Lovely, very nice.
They're literally just kicking the ball one to each other.
Shane Byrne live reports from his house. Thank you, sir.
Take care, man.
We'll see you next weekend for the final. Thanks a million. And we'll also hear from Bernard Brogan, who was on the Late Late Show on Friday night after his retirement, and Dublin legend Charlie Redmond will join us to reflect on one of the best ever Dublin careers.
98 FM. Now that's what I call sport.
Now we're going to finish this week's show with all things GAA and Nathan Whelan. Firstly, we know the pairing for the club championship final after the semi-finals, and it was freezing at Parnell Park.
It was indeed. It was freezing when Thomas Davis, the Throne champions, Kilmacook Crokes, to book their first senior football championship final in 28 years. The Tallaght trained 4-1 early on, but a late first half rally saw them head in level at the break, 6 points apiece. A solid second half saw them run out 2-12 to 1-10 winners as they look forward forward to a Senior 1 final just 12 months after winning the Senior 2 Championship. Elsewhere, Thomas Davis will face Ballyboden St Enda's in the final, who reached their first decider since winning the Championship in 2015. They saw off last year's runners-up St Jude's by 210 to 110, and the final will take place next Sunday at Parnell Park.
Yes, now Bernard Brogan retires from the Dubs anyway, Nathan. 2006, he made his first Dublin appearance. I think it was in a Leinster quarter-final. He was on the Late Late Show on Friday. We're going to hear from him in a second. But just give us some stats on an unbelievable career in blue for Bernal.
Yes, 13 years in blue, 13 Leinster titles, 7 All-Irelands, 5 National Football Leagues, 4 All-Stars, including the Footballer of the Year in 2010. He scored 6 goals and 73 points in 14 games in that year. It just shows how much he carried the team. Bernard Brogan, he played 116 times, scoring 36 goals, 344 points. That's 452 points overall. He becomes the third all-time top scorer for Dublin behind Dean Rock and Jimmy Keaveney, and just an amazing player overall.
Yes, Charlie Redmond is on the line. Charlie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jamie.
Now, Charlie, you're sixth on that list of all-time Dublin scorers. Did you know that?
Well, someone had pointed out to me, I think it was actually Barney said it to me. Barney Rock, I think he's ahead as well. He's well fair. But I think it says something that Bernard, who is not a sort of, what would you call the nominated free taker, has accumulated such a score. It's a phenomenal achievement.
Now, Charlie, how many points did you score if you're sixth on the list? Do you know the answer?
No, I haven't got a clue, Jamie, sorry.
Give me a guess.
I wouldn't have a clue. I honestly don't have a clue. I don't know.
Okay, you scored 351 points, Charlie, 15 goals and 306 points. So, yeah, you're 100 or so behind Bruno. But, sixth on that list. It's something that'll go down in history for you and Bernard Brogan too. And we're going to hear from him now, a quick clip of him talking to Ryan Tuberty on RT's Late Late Show on Friday.
I kind of knew throughout the year, this is kind of a bit of a bonus year for me. At the start of the year, I had a chat with Jim and kind of asked him, did he feel like I'll offer something? Like I always said, that I'll say until I feel I can offer something, or the management team feels I can offer something that another lad can't. And I felt I still had the energy, I still had a spark. I got a bad injury last year. I was moving really well, and it took me out a whole year, more or less. I said, if I can get back to that, just that game before I did my injury, I think I can add something to this team. And I had a chat with Jim, and Jim said, yeah, I know the situation. You've come back from bad injury. This is the reality. You're 34 years of age, but I believe that my gut is telling me for you to come with us. I know what you've done for us. I know what you can turn, how you can turn a game, and I'd love to have you come with us and be there as an option.
Yeah, that clip courtesy of RTE's Late Late programme. Charlie, your reaction to the news that Mr. Brogan is hanging up his boots and gloves from certainly the sense of wearing blue anyway?
Well, I don't think many people were taken by shock by this or surprised by it, because I think it was on the cards. He didn't play an awful lot of game time this year, unfortunately, and I think we all knew it was coming. But I have to say, I was disappointed that he wasn't given an opportunity to see out his career on an All-Ireland final day, albeit the last few minutes when I thought he could have been given a run. But I think there's a lot of people playing football today because of Bernard Brogan. I think his departure is a sad time, but as I said, not unexpected. What he's done for Gaelic football in Dublin is absolutely phenomenal, and he's put it himself in an amazing way, and he's always put himself, his family, his club, and indeed the GAA in general in an exemplary manner. And if people out there can be half a footballer that Bernard Brogan, they'll have a great career ahead of them.
Yeah, one of the most successful Dublin players ever, Charlie, with 7 All-Irelands in his trophy cabinet, 13 Leinsters, 5 league titles and, 4 All-Stars as well. Like, one of the best players to ever play the game, really.
I don't think that's in doubt. I think he's up there, that he was upper echelons of the very legends of Dublin GAA, and indeed the legends of GAA in general. I think he's the first player ever to retire from Dublin with 7 All-Irelands, albeit I know he'll want other guys behind them who have 7 All-Irelands to retire with more than 7. But I've no doubt also that he'll be sadly missed in the dressing room by all the guys. And I'm sure, as he said there himself, he felt he had something to offer this year, and I think he would have something to offer next year as well. I think his experience, his advice to young players is invaluable, and I think he would have a part to play in bringing people on. And I don't think it'd be too far down the line when we see Barry get involved with management with Dublin, probably at a minor level or probably in development level, but because certainly the talent he has, it must be tapped into and it must not be just let slip away now. He's a businessman. We know he runs his own business and the best of luck to him and that, and it's a very successful business for him. But I'd hate to see him walk away from the blue jersey. I think he has so much still to offer to us. As Jim Gavin has done, he could go in there and he could do a job like that. Although he'd have to come from sort of, as I said, a development level, and then to the minors. But I wish him the very best of luck. It's a great day for him in some way, in that he's walked away. He's walked away with a pocket full of medals that other fellas in this country could, if they had one All Ireland medal, they'd die happy. And he's got seven, and the very best of luck to him what he does in the future.
Charlie, just, you know, I suppose, and again, when you're listening to him speaking on the late and whatever, you know, he's saying about the process of making, you know, his decision, and I'm sure he spoke to Jim Gavin. Like, do you think it was 100% his choice, or would he have sat down with Jim and went, listen, I'd like to play again next year, do you have a role for me? Because I'm sure the last thing he wanted was to kind of stay available and then not be picked even for squads, like.
Yeah, well, I'd say that played a part in it as well, and I think... I remember years ago when I was towards the end of my career, I had a night out with the late Alan Ball, the English footballer, and we were having a few beers up in Dundalk, and I talked to him about when did you think it was time to retire, and he says to me, once you start thinking about retirement, it's time to retire. And I listened to what he was saying, and what he said was right, because once the thought enters your head for the first time, it never, ever, ever goes away. And they're always trying to choose the best time to walk away. And there's one thing about Bernard when he walks away. He's leaving Dublin football in a much better state than when he came into it. And if everybody can say that when they walk away from football, they'll know they'll have a great career. People will not have as good careers as Bernard Brogan. Some will have better careers, but very few will have better careers than him. And I think... Well, I'm sure he's going to continue playing club football for a number of years, and I'm sure, as you, to answer your question, I think the decision was his and his alone. I would think the fact that he only saw a minimum amount of game time this year was probably the final nail in his decision to walk away. But as he said himself, he said he has nothing to, he has no regrets. He's been player of the year. He's won 13 Leinster, 7 All Irelands. You know, it's an amazing career he has. 4 All Stars to boot, although. In a team game, the individual recognition is not what you're after. You're after the collective prize for the team, and I'm sure his 4 All Stars, what he's very proud of, they're probably the bottom of the list. I'm sure it's his All Ireland medals that are the most important to him.
And Charlie, lastly, we're all set to go again for 2020 and the hunt for another All Ireland title for the Dubs, and we hope Jim Gavin will still be in charge. We hope Stephen Cluxton will still be the captain in goal, and all systems go again for the new campaign.
Well, ideally, that's what we'd all like. We've only heard about it going there, and I know after the All Ireland final that there was an acceptance by the team that nobody would announce anything for a number of weeks, so they wanted to get the celebrations and all that out of the way, and didn't want to deflect from that. And in fairness, that's been allowed to happen, and I'm sure Bernard, in announcing this, did so, you know, when he spoke to Jim Gavin and spoke to the Dublin County Board about when he was going to announce it. And yes, we hope that it's the only one we see walking away this year, because there's certainly more All Irelands in that team, and the chance of getting 6 in a row. We were all very nervous for the 5 in a row. I think that's true to the state, and I don't think we'll be as nervous for the 6 in a row. But there's one thing about it, we have a team that is still young, it's still getting better, and there's no reason why we can't be contesting the All-Ireland final next year.
Great stuff, Charlie Rebin, as always. Thanks for your time. We'll speak to you in 2020.
Slán, Jamie.
And that is it for another week on the That's What I Call Sport. All of our guests podcasts in the podcast section of 98FM.com. And we will see you next Sunday, folks, where we'll have an FAI Cup Final special, plus, of course, a preview of the Rugby World Cup Final. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport. Get the full show every Sunday morning from 9, only on 98FM.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.